Tereo Ererangi o Te Mania. This episode was produced in Otatahi by Plains Media, with support from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Speaking for the Planet, a series of powerful ideas and opinions from the young minds in Otatahi. This year's theme is Our Ocean, Our Future, Our Responsibility. Brought to you by Sustainable Otatahi Christchurch and the New Zealand Association for Environmental Education, with support from Environmental Canterbury.
You are now listening to Year 9 to 11 prepared speeches. Up next, Eva Kelly, Hurunui College.
Put your hand up if you like the ocean. It could be anything about it. The rushing waves, the cute little fishies, or just the soft sand between your toes. But now imagine an ocean that went from vibrant shiny colours to a murky white. An ocean with dead fish blobbing in every direction. An ocean slowly drowning entire countries. This will be the dreadful truth if climate change does not stop now. Today, I invite you to pause for a moment and consider the significant impact climate change is having on our oceans. Today, I'll be uncovering the horrificness of coral bleaching, endangerment of marine life, and the rapidly rising sea levels. Firstly, coral bleaching. Coral bleaching happens when the oceans rise and rise in temperature. The coral hates this and blames a tiny little algae living in its tissue called zooxanthellae and just kicks it out. Little does the coral know, this algae was protecting it. The coral then gets all stressed out, draining all its colour, becoming a plain murky white. Bleached corals are much, much more vulnerable to disease and just die. So because of climate change, beautiful coastlines are dying, and the things living in them are dying too. Secondly, impact on marine life. Because of climate change, there is way too much CO2 in the atmosphere of our planet Earth. Now imagine the ocean is a big 361 million square kilometer sponge covering 71% of the Earth's atmosphere. That big sponge is going to want to suck up all that delicious CO2. But once the oceans absorb some of the CO2, it sadly suffocates some of the things living in it. Eventually, with a significant increase of CO2, the CO2 will be killing nearly everything living in the ocean, from the world's biggest animal to the longest living animal. Thirdly, rising sea levels. The sea levels rise and rise in temperature. And rise when the ice caps melt into the ocean, making its volume bigger and bigger and bigger. It's like when you put flowers in a vase. The more flowers and further down in the vase they are, the more likely it is that the water will overflow. But this cause isn't just a little spill on the table. It's much more important than that. But our oceans will be at least 16 centimetres higher by 2050, making the stunning coastlines of our neighbours Tuvalu, Kiribati, Fiji, and much, much more a thing of the past. In conclusion, next time you want to do something that makes climate change worse, such as unnecessarily burning fossil fuels, supporting polluting factories, and supporting tree deforestation, think about those dead little fishies, sad coastlines, and the countries that are slowly drowning. And always remember, the ocean can't speak for itself. That doesn't mean we can't speak for it.
Up next, Jess Armstrong, St. Andrews College.
Picture this. You're on a tramp somewhere in the mountains. The sun is beaming down at you in honeyed rays. And below you can see a thin stream ending in a clear blue pool at the base of the track. The birds are chattering loudly in the trees nearby, their voices mingling sweetly. The sky is crystal clear, and the air is fresh and tastes sweet on your tongue. Then, less than a heartbeat later, the sun's golden rays would dim as the sky darkened, and your skin would start to blister and peel, every inch feeling like razors tearing into you. A sinking nausea would grip your stomach, and your head would feel infected and fuzzy, migraines pounding, then your vision would gray before slowly turning to black. Sound nice? Death? This particular scenario is the result of a sudden cutoff of oxygen. Who here knows a bit about oxygen? Well, I don't know you, but I think it's fair to assume you know it's important. And you want to know who we owe well over half of our oxygen to? You want to know who we owe, in turn, our lives to? Phytoplankton, our tiny, unknown, planty superheroes that we are literally dependent on. You know that hypothetical scenario from earlier? Well, that's the immediate effect if we lose these tiny microscopic organisms. 50 to 80% of our oxygen. Phytoplankton are literally vital. Yet, before I mentioned them, did you even know what they were? Well, let's do a crash course on why we owe these tiny life forms so much and how we're essentially trying to kill them. First off, introductions. Phytoplankton are single-cell plants that can range from 2 micrometers in diameter up to 20 centimeters. Some are tiny, as we've covered, and some of them, and you're unable to see them with your eyes, and some of them are big and can cluster, becoming large enough to see from space. They're like a limey green color caused by a pigment called chlorophyll that's created during photosynthesis. Which brings us to our topic. There are an octillion single cells of phytoplankton, a billion, billion, billion. Even more than there are stars in the observable universe. So it's really not that surprising when we find out that they produce nearly 80% of our oxygen. They do this through photosynthesis, something over 99% of plants are capable of, where they turn sunlight into chemical energy, food, absorbing CO2 and releasing oxygen. Sounds like a dream, right? Kill 2 birds with 1 stone? Well, yeah, except this is where we come in. Microplastics. Sound familiar? Well, it should, because it's kind of our fault. Whatever we choose to put in the trash instead of reusing, whatever we leave on the ground instead of choosing to pick up, whenever we just choose to be lazy and ignore the whale of a mess we've made. Perhaps me telling you this is a bit cliched, but doesn't make it any less true. All those bits of plastic end up in the ocean, and then all those bind together when traveling down the Ganges and touring the globe, and then instead of decomposing, they disintegrate into nearly microscopic, gravelly pieces of plastic that just float around forever. And that miracle of nature, our vital life source, well, phytoplankton does not mix well with plastic, micro or not. Plastic can be ingested, badly disrupting the delicate photosynthetic process they go through. Also comes the fact that plastic is quite toxic even to humans, let alone our little friends. This can lead to rapid spreading of diseases that can just start to destroy them and their habitats. So yeah, we're destined to die if we continue this. And again, while this is cliched, it's really not too late. Plastic doesn't have to end up in the ocean. There are some steps you can do to do your part. First off, try avoid single-use plastics. This is easy. This means less plastic cutlery, plastic bags, plastic cups. And then if it's truly necessary, you can always find a way to reuse them or recycle them. We can still save our ocean friends, and in turn, we can still save ourselves. It just takes one.
Next up, George Wren, St. Andrews College.
Let's face it, with the way we are treating our ocean, carbon will be real. According to many sources, the equivalent of 2,000 Tacoma trucks worth of waste enters our oceans on a daily basis. Marine life is removed from their natural habitats every day, significantly reducing our ocean's marine biodiversity. As the world temperature rises, so does the ocean temperature, making our oceans more acidic to the life below the water. With the burning of fossil fuels such as coal, gas, and oil, it leads to ocean warming and acidification. This change in the ocean makes it increasingly difficult for many marine species to survive, further imperiling the delicate balance of the life below the surface.
During the time I've spent in Fiji and the Cook Islands, I have realised how the ocean is sacred and intertwined with their cultures. Do we really want to take away the ocean from the Pacific people?
State the issues are important, but what solutions have been implemented? Okay, you may be thinking there are boats doing ocean cleanups, but have you thought about the harm that this might have caused to the life below the water? Have you thought about the carbon emissions, greenhouse gases, and the oil burnt to power these ship vessels? No, I don't think so. These projects will only stake the positives while putting aside the negatives. Another example of this is geoengineering. It is designed to fight global warming, such as solar radiation management or carbon dioxide removal. While these methods aim to reduce greenhouse gases or reflect sunlight to cool the planet, they can cause side effects like altering weather patterns, ultimately impacting our oceans. The UNDGS states, the state of our ocean will ultimately determine the survival of our species. So why aren't we doing anything to save our ocean, ultimately the human race? Are there any actually plausible solutions?
Yes, there are actually. The infamous paper straws. Although most workplaces have changed from paper straws, plastic straws to paper straws, the interior of these straws all have a plastic coating. So what's the point? An alternative to these deceiving soggy paper straws are bamboo straws. They won't get soggy while also being reliable and reusable and costs almost the same to produce. What about plastic bags and other plastic items? Governments can implement plastic tax, charging you if you decide to use any plastic items while reusable alternatives are available. Overfishing has increased drastically in the past years. A possible and achievable solution to this is to completely ban harmful fishing methods, such as bombing, trawling, longlining, pressing, and many more. Our government has spent millions and billions on protecting our oceans, but are they actually effective? The New Zealand government has introduced the Fisheries Management and Quota System. The system is expensive to implement and maintain, with questions over whether they effectively prevent overfishing or serve the interests of all stakeholders equally. While in Tahiti Nui, resorts have food that ranges broadly, while controlling seafood intake to help replenish the ocean with marine biodiversity. In the end, our oceans are the heartbeat of our planet, and their health reflects out on. It's time you move beyond surface-level solutions and truly commit to a sustainable change, reducing plastic waste, protect marine life, and hold industries accountable. If we act now, we can restore the ocean's vitality for future generations. The question is, are we willing to prioritise the planet over profit before it's too late?
Up next, Frankie Jepson, Hagley College.
Tēnā koutou katoa, kia te ākanga hou. E te kura o te puna wai o Waipapa. He uri tēnei o Ngāti Tūwharatoa ki Taupō Nui Atia. Ko Jepson tōki whānau. Kia ora, my name is Frankie, a year 9 from Hagley College. Last summer, my friend returned from Fiji and gave me a small piece of white coral. I remember holding it in my hand. Its delicate structure, almost like bone, but lighter, eerie. It was beautiful, but even then, something about it felt sacred, as if it didn't truly belong on a shelf in my bedroom. That simple gift sparked something in me, a growing awareness that our oceans hold more than just beauty. They hold life and legacy. Imagine, you're a fish, swimming peacefully in the coral reef that you call your home. Out of nowhere, a tourist paddles over and snaps off a piece of coral for themselves. If that fish was human, would you bulldoze a wall in their home? This is one of the many ways we are harming our ocean. So, let's talk about the facts. Coral reefs in the Pacific are among one of the most diverse ecosystems on Earth. They're home to thousands of species. These reefs are like underwater cities, providing shelter, food, and breeding grounds. Many of the fish that we eat in Aotearoa, including my favourites, snapper and hoki, depend on reef ecosystems at some point in their life cycle. But reefs do so much more than just support marine life. Despite covering less than 1% of the ocean floor, they are incredibly biodiverse, supporting around 25% of all marine life. They protect coastal communities from storm surges and breakwater. They protect coastal communities from storm surges and erosion, acting as natural breakwaters. They support economies through tourism and fisheries. And for many Pacific Island nations, a healthy reef means a healthy economy. One of the reasons half our coral reefs are turning white, draining them of their vibrant life, is because of coral bleaching. Coral bleaching happens when we as humans contribute to climate change. The ocean heating up like a pot on a stove, the warmth draining the colour out of our coral. What you might not realise is the alarming rate we are killing our most diverse ecosystem. Acidification, overfishing and pollution are putting these reefs at risk. If we lose our coral reefs, we lose much more than just biodiversity. We lose security, culture and identity. For me as Māori, this isn't just an environmental issue. It's personal. My connection to the ocean is deep and ancestral. We refer to many marine species as taonga, treasures of great cultural and spiritual value. The health of the ocean is intrinsically tied to our own well-being. As tangata whenua, we see the ocean not as a resource to exploit, but as a relative to protect. We must act, not just for environmental reasons, but to honour these deep cultural ties. So, what can we do, you might ask? Well, everyone can help. No, I'm not just talking about eliminating plastic or never using your car again. It may seem obvious, but always pick up after yourself. Up to 80% of the ocean's pollution is litter, and majority of it is plastic. So join in regular beach cleanups to remove debris that will end up in the ocean. Fish responsibly. Our fish are essential for habitat formation. Throw back the kai moana you don't need and leave babies in their home to thrive. We can protect marine life by establishing more marine reserves, regulating fishing practices, supporting local iwi and hapu and ocean governance, and taking bold action on climate change. It also means respecting the knowledge and kaitiakitanga of Indigenous communities who lived in harmony with these ecosystems for generations. Going back to that piece of coral, it now sits on my shelf as a reminder. Not as a souvenir, but as a responsibility. It reminds me that we all have a role to play in protecting what we love. That even the smallest pieces of the ocean need protection. Not only for their own survival, but for maintaining the health and stability of oceans worldwide. I'm Frankie Jeffson, and I implore you not to wait until these treasures become memories. Let's protect our reefs, our taonga, so that future generations can experience their value and beauty just as we have. Thank you for listening. Tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā tātou katoa.
Next up, Sissy Chen, St. Andrews College.
Biology is a scientific expression of our desire to know nature. We are most likely to protect what we appreciate, and we are most likely to appreciate what we understand. The ecosystem of the sea carries the burden of the everyday lives of around 8 billion people, yet it's also being damaged by our activities that damage a variety of organisms and their respective habitats. Once the nutrient level in an ecosystem exceeds the critical load, the amount of added nutrient that can be absorbed by plants without damaging ecosystem integrity, the excess is eventually leached away and ends up in the sea. Such events are only amplified by the overuse of fertilizers, which aim to continually replenish our soils with nutrients. The buildup of surplus nutrients in a body of water is known as eutrophication. Sudden population growth of algae and plants occurs as a result. Once a portion of the nutrients has been exhausted, the excess plants die, and their decomposition depletes the oxygen levels in the area, leading to the creation of dead zones in the sea. Cyanobacteria outbreaks are common, and the former's death can release toxins into the surrounding seawater. Consequently, the saltwater habitat becomes a no longer suitable environment for many organisms to live in, threatening their survival and that of the ecosystem in general. Furthermore, the decomposition of dead matter produces carbon dioxide, contributing to the acidification of the water by lowering the pH, bringing about ocean acidification and increasing the susceptibility of corals to bleaching by reducing the abundance of materials needed for their structural repair. Currently, the largest dead zone in the world extends to almost 165,000 square miles. Just think about that number. That's almost the size of Florida. Birth control pills often involve the use of estrogen, which is commonly found in sex steroids. The use of such prescriptions can be hugely beneficial for consumers. However, they can also be detrimental for wildlife. This is because despite the treatment of effluent before it's released, it still contains harmful remnants of such pharmaceuticals. Although you might assume that microscopic amounts of estrogen in the environment somewhere would be no big deal, you couldn't be more wrong. Their presence has severe consequences, causing infertility, sexual dysfunction, and the development of female characteristics in male fish. As we can then expect, this puts many aquatic animals in danger of extinction and at risk of unforeseen consequences of neglectful actions. Although it is widely recognized that humanity's failure to protect the environment will lead to eventual devastation, there is still an incomplete understanding of the specific struggles of species and the ecological consequences of simple actions. We have a responsibility to care for the planet that has always treated us as its own child. An understanding of biology is vital to understand and help solve many of society's problems. Therefore, the first step towards conservation is knowledge. Thank you.
Up next, Carter Evans, St. Andrews College.
My name is Carter Evans, and today I'm here to speak for something that doesn't have a voice, the ocean. Let me take you back to last September. My family and I went to Thailand during the school holidays. It was everything you'd expect. Warm beaches, clear water, colourful fish. But when I was snorkeling, I noticed something I hadn't expected. Plastic. Bits of food wrappers, a floating bottle, foam clinging to the reef. I surfaced and asked one of the locals why it was so polluted. He said, "This comes from the cities. After the rains, the ocean gives it back." That stuck with me. The ocean gives back everything we throw into it. And that made me realize this isn't just a problem in Thailand, it's global and it's getting worse. Right now, the ocean is under pressure like never before. Marine animals are tangled in waste, reefs are dying, entire species are vanishing. Even parts of the ocean we haven't explored yet, the deep sea, are already being damaged by mining. And we forget how much the ocean gives us. It provides more than half the oxygen we breathe. It feeds billions of people. It absorbs heat and carbon, slowing climate change. It supports the balance of life on Earth. And yet, we act like it's invisible. Every minute, we pour more plastic into it. We fish like the ocean will never run out. We allow companies to drill, mine, and dump. We're not just damaging the ocean, we're damaging our future. That's why the theme of this competition is so important. Making waves, our ocean, our future, and our responsibility. I'll break that down. Our ocean. It's not just somewhere we go to swim or surf. It connects us all from Christchurch to Thailand, to the Arctic, and back. What we do in one place affects the whole system. There's no such thing as someone else's ocean. It's shared, it's vital, and it's fragile. And right now, it's reaching its limit. Our future. Let's be honest, we're not talking about some distant problem. We're talking about the world we will inherit. By 2050, there could be more plastic in the ocean than fish. Think about that. No sea turtles, no coral reefs, no safe seafood, no clear water. Is that the world we want? Because it's not the world I want to grow up in. But the future isn't written yet. It depends on what we do now. Our responsibility. This is where we stop waiting for someone else to fix it. because responsibility doesn't mean we have to do everything. It means we have to do something. We can refuse single-use plastics, buy less fast fashion, clean up beaches and rivers, talk about ocean protection at school, support laws that protect marine ecosystems, and speak up, like I'm doing now. People say one person can't make a difference, but that's not true. One becomes two, two becomes 10, and 10 becomes a movement, and every movement starts with a ripple. That's why I'm speaking, because I care, because the seal tangled in the fishing line, the reef smothered in plastic, the seabird that mistook a bottle cap for food, they can't speak. So I will, and I hope you will too. Because the ocean doesn't need more excuses. It doesn't need more silence. It needs action. So I'll leave you with this. What kind of wave will you make? Not next year, not when you feel ready, now.
Next up, Anthony Song, St. Andrew's College.
Today, we stand at the edge of something vast, indispensable, and mighty. It sustains life, empowers economies, and shapes traditions and cultures. However, underneath the ocean's huge and intimidating bravado, it is hurt. Enduring a constant and threatening crisis of overfishing, pollution, and climate change every day. The time for passive concern is over. It is time for us to make waves of action, waves of change and responsibility, and waves for the future. On the surface, the ocean can be viewed as just water. However, it is the lungs of the earth, producing over half of the oxygen we breathe. It is a source of food for billions of people and animals across the whole world, and home to millions of different species. As the ocean provides food security, resources, and other aspects for economic growth, the ocean's indispensable contributions to the development of our societal and economic sectors in our society raises the question, what have we given back? The ocean's future is not written in destiny, nor a foregone conclusion. It is ours to shape. The ocean's future relies on our actions, the innovations we pursue, our morals, and the policies we enact today. Our actions, no matter how small, will ripple outwards, shaping the balance of life beneath the waves. If we endeavor to adapt to a more sustainable lifestyle, to take care and thrive for the further empowerment of the ocean and its ecosystem, the ocean will take care of us. As Boyan Slat, the founder of the Ocean Cleanup, once said, for society to progress, we should not only move forwards, but also clean after ourselves. Responsibility is not a burden, it is an opportunity. To ensure future generations are able to live with the luxuries of a clean ocean and a stable ecosystem. We have waited too long. Each one of us must recognize the significant role in protecting the ocean, adjust our behaviors, and hold ourselves and others to a higher standard. It requires long-term commitment and time. However, every effort contributes to greater movement towards ocean conservation. So, let us make waves of empowerment and change, because our ocean, our future, and our responsibility are inseparably linked. The tides are shifting, and the responsibility are ours to take care of the ocean, which takes care of us. Let us not wait for the waves of change to come to us. Let us be the ones who make the waves. The ocean is our past, our present, and our future. Most of all, it is our responsibility. Now is the time. Let's protect it together. Thank you.
Up next, James Ryan, St. Andrew's College.
The ocean is breaking. Can you hear it? Not all at once. Not in crashing waves or collapsing cliffs, but in different ways. In the soft rattle of plastic caught in seaweed, in reefs fading from neon to bone white, in fish that no longer follow the currents that they once knew. We talk about clear water like it's a guarantee, but it isn't. Coral reefs are dying, their colours drained like old film. Microplastics drift through the sea like confetti at a funeral, bright, weightless, and everywhere they shouldn't be. The fish are fewer, their bodies are lean, eyes duller, they swim like they're lost. And here in Aotearoa, where our coastlines look like postcards, the truth actually lives under the surface. Commercial trawlers drag metal teeth across the seafloor, leaving behind deserts. Dolphins wash up with bellies full of bottle caps, and seals lie thin on the rocks, searching for food that will never come. We like to believe that the ocean is internal, eternal. Too big to break and too deep to damage. But the ocean is not invincible, and we are not innocent. But how about I make you imagine this instead? You wake up early, before the rush, the tide is low, the sky stained pink. You step into the shallows. The water wraps around your ankles like silk. There is no sting. There is no film. There is no slick on the surface. Beneath the surface, the coral glows like stained glass. Fish dart between the shadows. Fast, certain, and unafraid. A stingray skims by like it's painting the sand. And out further, a whale surfaces. A song rolls over the ocean like thunder in slow motion. There's no time. This time, there's nothing drowning it out. It's the same coastline, but a different world. And the question becomes, how do we get here? We remember. We have to remember that the ocean isn't something separate. It's not a view. It's not a backdrop. It's part of us, and it always has been. In Te Reo Māori, there's a concept called whakapapa, a sacred thread that ties us to the land, the ocean, and each other, a relationship that we've been ignoring for too long. The ocean holds memory, ancestry. We need to stop asking, what can the ocean give me, and start asking, what do I owe? That's the shift. Not a shift in just law, not a shift in just policy, but a shift in heart. So now pause, close your eyes, and breathe in. The ocean is still breathing. It's still caring for us, still forgiving us, but it can't forever. So we have a choice, to return to it, to protect it, and to stand for it. We have loved the ocean. If we can love the ocean as much as we want to fix it, then we can truly make the change. Because it can't speak like we can, so we have to speak for it. Thank you.
Up next, Bella Yang, St. Andrew's College.
All right, so picture this. One day, you wake up and suddenly half the oxygen you usually breathe just disappeared. Your chest tightens and every breath feels shallow like you're trying to breathe through a clogged, soggy straw. Your throat burns. Your head gets light and fuzzy like the whole world is spinning around you, but yet you're standing still. Your heart starts pounding as panic creeps in, and the air that used to feel so effortless now feels like it's slipping further and further away. Sounds like a bad dream, right? And yet that kind of scene that I've just described isn't just some horror fiction book or movie. Instead, it's a very real possibility if we keep on destroying our ocean. So as you can see, the ocean isn't just some faraway blue thing for vacation pics. It produces over 50% of the world's oxygen thanks to these tiny marine plants called phytoplankton. So if the ocean suffers, we all do. Our sea covers about 70% of the Earth's surface and are home to nearly 80% of all life on the planet. They regulate our climate, feed over 3 billion people worldwide, and absorb approximately 30% of all of carbon dioxide released into the atmosphere. So in short, the ocean are like the ultimate MVP of the Earth survival team. But here's the catch. Humans are treating the ocean like a trash can. Every year, there are about 8 million tons of plastics that ends up in our sea, which is like dumping a garbage truck full of straws, cans, boxes, and much more into our ocean every minute, every day. These plastics that ends up in our ocean causes harm to marine life, messes up the ecosystem, and even eventually make their way into our food. Additionally, overfishing has wiped out more than 90% of large fish populations in some parts of the world. Coral reefs, which supports 25% of marine life, are dying off due to warming waters and pollution. That being said, there are some ways we can flip the script and actually make a difference. For starters, swapping single-use plastics for reusable bottles, straws, and bags can seriously cut down the number of trash piling up in the ocean. It might seem small at first, but imagine millions, billions of people making that switch. That's a tidal wave of change. Less plastics means fewer animals getting hurt, cleaner beaches, and healthier oceans overall. Don't underestimate the power of your voice either. No matter if you're yapping about ocean issues to your friends, sharing posts online, or even sparking a conversation within your community, awareness spreads fast and it can inspire others to take action too. When more of us understand what's actually happening, it's much easier to push for policies that protect our oceans. And finally, jumping into action is huge. Whether it's joining a beach cleanup, supporting an online campaign, or starting a school project. Getting involved not only helps our water and marine animals, but it also connects you with others who care as well. And plus, it feels amazing to be a part of something bigger, making waves that really matter. So we don't have to be marine biologists or live by the beach to make a difference, but ignoring the ocean's SOS is no longer an option because the ocean's fate is tied to ours. If we let it drown in neglect and pollution, we'll all drown too. And when it comes to protecting our ocean, there are two ways we can respond. We can turn away and do nothing, or we can step up, face the challenge, and rise together as a whole community. The choice is yours. And then the good news? We're not powerless. We're loud, creative, and connected as a community armed with TikToks, memes, and passion. We can be the generation that makes waves, the kind that brings a real change. So let's own this responsibility for our blue planet. Because of this ocean, it's our future, and the time to save it is now. Thank you.
You are now listening to Year 12 to 13 prepared speeches. First up, Kate Simcock, St. Andrews College.
The ocean doesn't speak in words, it speaks in currents, in crashing waves and silent tides. But lately, it's been still. Every year, we dump over 11 million tons of plastic into our ocean. That's a garbage truck every minute, emptying into our seas. We pretend it disappears, out of sight, out of mind. But it doesn't vanish. It wraps around turtles' necks and fills the stomachs of seabirds. It breaks down into microplastics that flow through the water and through us. It sinks to the bottom of the ocean where life began and where now it ends. We ask, why should I care? You should care because the ocean gives us every second breath that we take. It regulates our climate, absorbing heat and carbon, protecting us from ourselves. Because it feeds 3 billion people. Because its health is our health. But still, we drill into it, drag nets through it, heat it, pollute it, ignore it. We act like the ocean is endless and invincible, but it's not. Half of all of coral reefs are already dead, gone. If temperatures rise above 1.5 degrees, we'll lose up to 90% more. Entire ecosystems erased. Entire species unnamed, unstudied, unseen, forgotten before they were even found. And still we ask, is it really that bad? Yes, but it can get better. There is still time. Time to ban bottom trawling in marine sanctuaries. Time to stop treating our ocean like a landfill. Time to stop choosing profit over planet, consequence over convenience. Time to stand up, not just for what we can see, but for what we may never see again. The ocean wants to heal. It wants to thrive. And when we give it space, it does begin to. Whales are now returning with the waves without the pressure of constant fishing, no longer chased by engines and nets. Seagrass stretches along the seafloor, storing carbon and cleaning the water. Waves driven by wind power turbines, power homes, power change. Our seas are resilient. It wants to swell, to surge, to shine. We just need to step aside and let it breathe. Because making waves doesn't just mean causing chaos. It means creating change. It means buying less and choosing better, reusing, relearning, rethinking. It starts with asking better questions and demanding better answers. It means using your voice, even when it shakes, because silence is compliance, and compliance is sinking us. This isn't somebody else's job. It's not waiting on the next government or the next generation. It is us, and it is now. The ocean doesn't need millions of people doing it flawlessly. It just needs millions doing what they can. Because everything we do touches the ocean, and everything that the ocean does touches us. Ko te whenua, ko au, ko au, ko te whenua. We are the ripple, the current, the tide that turns. So let's be loud, let's be inconvenient, and let's be unstoppable, and make waves for the future, for the ocean, for all of us. Thank you.
Up next, Ruby Love Smith, Hagley College.
Does anyone here know where Redcliffs is? Well, I've lived there since I was 2 years old. It's where I grew up, where I went to primary school. But when I got to high school, I had to go to a city school. Now, growing up, we never really came into the city. So when I got to high school, I started to realise that a lot of the things about my life growing up by the beach that I thought were normal weren't actually normal. And one of those things was tsunami drills. About once a term, the whole school would have to walk all the way up the hill, just to have to walk all the way back down again in the name of a wave that wasn't actually coming. Now, for some reason, I didn't realise that the city kids didn't need to do that. So I got to school and I'm telling all these stories about walking up the hill, and all I'm getting are blank stares. They didn't know what to do in the case of a tsunami, and some of them didn't even know what a tsunami was. So we talked about it, and they came to the conclusion that, oh, Ruby, well, if a tsunami came, we just follow you, because you know what to do. And it's so simple, isn't it? Let me put it to you this way. When that wave is coming, who are you following? The kid from the city who thinks they can ride a surfboard over it, or the local person running up the hill towards safety? Follow the person with the experience, the person who's seen it before, the person who's lived it, right? But we all know that's not what happens. It's easy to say, but when the moment actually comes, we falter. Or at least, that's the case for the biggest wave that we've ever faced, climate change. And that wave is actually coming. But all of a sudden, the people in charge aren't listening to the people who know what to do. So let me give you another example. About a year ago, I turn on the TV and it's the Resources Minister, Shane Jones, and he's talking about mining. He's yelling, as usual, and he goes, if there is a mineral, if there is a mining opportunity and it is impeded by a blind frog, then it's goodbye, Freddy. And it's as if I can hear the sea level rising as he speaks, right? Because he doesn't know what he's talking about. He's listening to the wrong people. The people who want profit over a planet. And he knows that. He knows that if he wanted to do the right thing, he could talk to the local iwi or the conservationists, but he chooses not to. And that is the problem. We only listen to the experts when it suits us. And by experts, I don't just mean the people with degrees. I mean the people like me who live where the sea is rising so fast we're having to build walls just to buy us more time. I mean Tonga Te Whenua, who understood this land before Pākehā even knew it was here. The people with the lived experience. The people who care. The people who climate change will hit the hardest. Your sons, your daughters, your nieces, nephews, grandchildren. That is who you have to listen to. Do you see the wave coming on the horizon? Of course you don't, because you don't feel the impact until it hits, and oh, will it hit.
When's the tipping point meant to be? 2030? Well, it's 2025 now. That wave is getting closer and closer. The sea level is getting higher and higher. Our rangatahi, our coastal residents, their houses have already started flooding, and believe me, yours is not far behind. The solution is right in front of you. It's so simple. Listen. Listen to the young people speaking to you here today. Listen to your neighbours. Listen to the climate scientists. Hell, listen to David Attenborough. Because when you listen, you learn. And when you learn, you understand. And when you understand, you do something. Because we need to do something. I could have come up today and recited the usual statistics on coastal erosion or sea level rise, but that's not why I'm here. This kōrero is grounded in the kaupapa that doesn't come from research papers, but comes directly from the heart of our planet. Whakarongo mai te tiro mai ke kone tātou, kia ora.
Up next, Guy Bentley, St Andrews College.
Good afternoon, everyone. Now, I want you to close your eyes for a moment and imagine the sounds of waves crashing gently on the shore. Picture the vibrant corals glowing beneath the surface, the shimmer of fish darting through turquoise waters, the rhythm of tides that have pulsed across our planet for billions upon billions of years. Now, open your eyes and realize what you just imagined may soon become a memory, not a reality. Because right now, our oceans are crying out for help. Every single second, a garbage truck's worth of plastic enters our seas. Coral reefs, the rainforests of the ocean, home to millions of species of fish, are bleaching and dying. Marine animals, turtles, whales, dolphins, are being washed up on our shores, their bodies filled with toxic plastic. And while all this is happening, the ocean's temperature is rising, its chemistry is changing, and its balance, the very balance that supports life on our planet as we know it, is tipping. This isn't someone else's problem. This is our problem. And today I'm here to ask, will we listen to the ocean before it is too late? The ocean covers more than 70% of our planet's surface. It produces over half of the oxygen that we breathe. It regulates our climate, absorbs CO2, and feeds over a billion people every single day. In short, the ocean sustains life in many forms. But for too long, we have treated it like a dumping ground, a limitless resource we could take from without consequence. We fish without restraint, pour in chemicals and waste, and drill for oil as if the ocean can withstand anything that we throw at it. Let me give you a snapshot of what that's done. Coral reefs, which support 25% of marine life, are dying at an alarming rate. Once vibrant ecosystems are now ghastly white, bleached from stress and from heat. Plastic pollution has reached even the deepest parts of our oceans, where no human has ever swum, but now where it lives. Marine species are disappearing before we even have the chance to understand them. Entire food chains are collapsing, and the ocean's rising temperatures caused by us and global warming are fueling stronger storms, higher sea levels, and unpredictable weather that already affect millions of people and animals around the globe. This may sound grim, I grant, and it is, but there is a silver lining. We still have the time and we still have the power. Saving the ocean does not require some magical global overhaul overnight. It starts with awareness. It grows with action. We can reduce single-use plastics, the straws, the bottles, the bags, and the wrappers that too often end up choking marine life. we can support businesses and brands that commit to sustainable practices, especially when it comes to fishing and packaging. We can use our voices, writing to elect officials, voting for leaders who prioritize environmental protection, and raising awareness in our communities. We can make smarter choices with what we eat and favor sustainably sourced seafood, and if necessary, cut back. Most importantly, we can remember that every single choice we make matters. They ripple out into the world, like a drop in our ocean. One choice may seem small, but together it can create a wave. Don't underestimate what your actions can do. A school choosing to ban plastic bottles, or a community organizing a beach cleanup, or even a family just deciding to buy less and reuse more, would make changes. And these are the changes that create momentum. And it is this momentum that helps save ecosystems. Our ocean is more than just a body of water. It is a living, breathing force that connects every continent, every person, and every life. It is history, it is future, and it's a miracle. But now, the ocean needs us as much as we have always needed and relied upon it. So I ask you, when the ocean calls, will you answer? Because if we act now, if we protect, if we restore, and if we respect our oceans, we don't just save the sea, we save ourselves. Thank you very much.
Lastly, Daniel Officer, St. Andrew's College.
Good afternoon, everyone. When we talk about sustainability, our thoughts often go straight to things like fossil fuels, forests, plastic bags, that sort of thing. But one of our planet's most powerful forces and one of its most vulnerable is often overlooked. I'm talking about the ocean. It covers over 70% of the Earth's surface. The ocean shapes our climate. It supports entire ecosystems. It sustains human life in ways that we barely notice. It produces over half the oxygen we breathe and absorbs almost a third of the carbon dioxide we emit, making it the Earth's largest natural carbon sink. And yet, when we talk about the fight against climate change, the ocean is often treated as background scenery, something in the background. We often tend to focus on things right in front of us. We tend to focus on things like replanting and offsetting carbon, but I think it's really, really important to remember the impact that the ocean has. Think of any good nature documentary, Planet Earth, Blue Planet, or more recently, David Attenborough's Ocean. The seas are alive with color and movement, schools of fish pulsing like liquid silver, sea turtles navigating ancient migratory paths, and whales performing long-distance journeys that stretch across the globe. It's breathtaking, but it's, as much as it's breathtaking, it's also extremely fragile. In Ocean, Attenborough doesn't just show us this beauty. He shows us what's at stake. The plastic we use for just 10 minutes can stay there for about 400 years. Coral reefs, home to 25% of marine life, are bleaching from rising sea temperatures. Some fish populations have dropped by over 90%. And as sea levels rise and ocean currents shift, even communities on land are beginning to feel the impact. The truth is confronting. The ocean, once our greatest protector, is now struggling to protect itself because of us. But here's the hopeful part. Nature's resilient. In the documentary, we see how marine reserves can bring back fish populations in just a few years. Coral reefs can regenerate. Ecosystems can recover if we give them the space and time that they need. Sustainability isn't just about going backward. It's about moving forward wisely. And sustainability doesn't just mean sorting your rubbish or skipping a plastic straw, although those might matter. It means supporting sustainable seafood, reducing carbon footprints, pressuring companies and governments to take responsibility. But most of all, it means changing how we view our relationship with the ocean. because we're not separate from it, as much as we might try to pretend that we are. The water cycle connects our rivers to the sea. What we put in the environment, the waste, the heat, the chemicals, it finds its way into the ocean every single time. And what happens to the ocean will inevitably happen to us. David Attenborough's life work has been a reminder of this connection. Through his voice, we've watched decades of transformation, both wondrous and worrying. In Ocean, his message is quiet but urgent. If we save the seas, we save ourselves. So the next time you see a wave breaking on the shore or a photo of a whale breaching, remember, we're not just looking at nature. We're looking at something that breathes for us, feeds us, stabilizes our climate, and holds memories of the earth older than any human civilization. And the ocean is calling for our action. We can't leave this to governments and scientists alone. Real change comes when people like us start where we are, at home, at school, in our daily choices. That might mean reusing single-use plastics, supporting sustainable seafood, donating to ocean conservation projects, or just sharing what you've learned. So to finish, I'd like to appeal to what many of us know as heritage. Heritage is what we leave behind once we're gone. And I think every single person in this room knows that we aren't on this earth forever. That one day we will leave this earth behind, and we may find ourselves anywhere that you might believe. However, I think the bottom line is we need to consider what we leave behind as a generation. We need to consider what our impact will be and what we will be remembered for as a generation once we're gone, and what we leave our children. So let's be the generation that rose to the challenge, the one that restored balance instead of just mourning its loss. Let's not wait till it's too late. Let's lead with purpose, unity, and with hope. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to Speaking for the Planet. This episode is a part of a thought-provoking series supported by Plains Media. Head to plains.org.nz and search for Speaking for the Planet to listen to the rest.